Well, Mike, the arc of justice seems to bend very slowly in cases brought against big oil. For years now, we have followed lawsuits in municipalities around the country, totaling around 30 by now. You have explained why these cases are so agonizingly slow as they move through the courts, even with mounting evidence of the oil company's crimes of deception. And as the climate crisis escalates, so do the obscene profits of oil and gas companies. They seem to even have backed off from their pretend concern about the climate crisis. So, Mike, let's start by talking about the gains in cases around the country, including the case filed here in Multnomah County in 2023. Can you give us a lay of the land?
Okay, well, the lay of the land is looking a lot better than it was a year ago, mainly because finally the U.S. Supreme Court has put an end to the chief stalling tactic of the oil companies, which is to try to federalize these state lawsuits. And we talked about the Minnesota lawsuit that Keith Ellison brought. He brought it in 20, and it has finally been allowed to go ahead by the U.S. Supreme Court's refusal to mess with the decision by the federal court, recognizing that, yeah, the states have their own right to do this. There is no right to jerk the case out of a state court and force it into a federal court.
Can you just explain a bit about why that's been so crucial, the distinction between taking cases to the federal court and the oil company's argument that this is a federal issue, congressional issue, rather than an issue for state or local municipalities?
Well, Jan, it's not really an important issue in this context. It's just a stall tactic. It's a way to delay deciding the merits of the case. It's no more, no less than that. It's not a very interesting argument. It's one that can matter a lot in certain contexts, but not in this one. It's strictly a delay. And now Minnesota's allowed to go ahead. You know, these cases have their own timeline, and they are moving to finally, really, truly moving. And they've hit a certain critical mass where they're expanding. But I'll get into how far they've reached after talking about one of the most interesting, which is filed right here in Portland. It's a Multnomah County lawsuit. It's the first one of its kind that seeks to hold a major oil and gas companies accountable for decades of client deception in terms of a specific event, namely the deadly 2021 heat dome that squatted over Oregon and Portland in June of 2021. So the lawsuit, it's a very interesting claim. It's got a new way of attributing blame to fossil fuel companies. The defendants are Exxon, BP, Conoco, Koch Industries, Total, as well as industry trade groups like the Petroleum Association. And the lawsuit says that the heat dome, which killed 69 people in Multnomah County, put a huge strain on municipal resources and was, quote, virtually impossible without human-caused climate change.
Can I add something of the wording from that complaint?
Oh,
They
sure.
charge a scheme to rapaciously sell fossil fuel products and deceptively promote them as harmless to the environment while they knew that carbon pollution emitted by their products in the atmosphere would likely cause deadly extreme heat events and so on. So the language is clearly dramatic and is framed in a morally charged way. Some complaints and briefs have very dry legal language. This is not that. Does that make a difference?
Well, it's a tactic, but they also, I think, are trying to counteract the fact that they rely heavily on abstract mathematical principles, the attribution theories. They're reaching to mean to attribute this damage to the oil companies and to fossil fuel use. But those are all peripheral. The heart of this case, as well as all the other cases, is what was the heart of the tobacco industry cases, namely the discovery about 8 or 9 years ago of memoranda and documents turned over by the oil companies concerning their knowledge of what was happening. The fact that they've been taking strides in terms of capital allocation based on climate change At the same time, they're funding institutions that deny it or more frequently try to cast doubt on it, saying it's up in the air. There are some say yes and others no. It's a debatable point.
Why is the deception, and for some it involves a case of conspiracy, why is this so central to these cases?
It shows your frame of mind. It shows, which is very difficult to prove, somebody's intent. This proves their intent, namely that they spread documents and arguments to the effect that climate change was not real or that climate change was debatable, knowing all the time that it was a reality. It was so real that they located refineries and made other huge investments based on its existence. So that intent is always a critical element, like of a crime. If you kill somebody, that's not going to be murder. If there's all sorts of, it could be self-defense, it could be an explosive rage. But if you have the frame of mind of deliberate and premeditation, then you've got a first-degree murder. So criminal intent is always important, and intent is important in civil cases as well.
Now, let's talk some about the California cases that were significant, not only in their size and the number of municipalities, but this, as I understand it, is the only fossil fuel producing state that has gone after big oil. It's much harder in states where oil is a central part of the machinery of the economy.
Exactly. The California case was enormous in every way because California is enormous. It has enough money to deal with whatever the oil companies throw at them. They've got essentially limitless resources. And they're also now consolidated with all the other lawsuits brought by counties and cities in California. As of 3 weeks ago, both the plaintiffs and defendants agreed to consolidate. So there'll be one big lawsuit that will be truly a big lawsuit. It will be well covered, and it will not happen soon because they're proceeding now with discovery, where California will be allowed to seek documents from and sworn testimony from big oil officials. They'll be able to target particular individuals, and it will be heavily influenced by contemporary events when the trials start. As is the criminal trial, if there's been a recent horrible crime, then you're in worse shape than if things have been relatively calm. And you're right about how they've retreated from promises made under some heat 3 or 4 years ago. But since the outbreak of the war in Ukraine, the price of oil spiking, oil companies have been rolling in money, hundreds of billions of dollars in profits. And they want to keep that rolling, and they have in turn taken back, without nearly the same publicity that they started, any and all promises to shift to cleaner forms of energy.
They have objected to the municipality where the case will be tried or centrally tried in San Francisco. And the claim is that San Francisco has so much anti-fossil fuel sentiment that they won't be fair there. And of course, the judges assure their attorneys that they will be unbiased and fair in approaching the trial, which always seems kind of funny, but how important has that loss been? Apparently, they lost their appeal to take the case away from the San Francisco court.
Of course, venue is very important. If it were tried in Kern County, which has a huge amount of oil producers in that county, they might have a different result. That's why it would be really a coup for people suing big oil to sue them in like Pennsylvania or Ohio or Texas or states where fossil fuel is an active industry with lots of employees. The places that have brought it have been the usual blue states: Massachusetts, New York, New England, Oregon, California. California is the first state that actually has, in part, a oil producing section. But California is just a monster state. It's got elements of every single part of our economy there. It would be really better in many ways to have a case initiated in Ohio or Pennsylvania, I think. But these cases are cresting, they're coming together. They're proliferating. Chicago just brought a similar lawsuit alleging climate fraud. And these cases, we need to distinguish them from the Montana case, for example, that we talked about last August, where a judge in Montana found a constitutional right to a clean and healthy environment. That's a novel finding. But these cases are very orthodox state court fraud and damages suits. They point to fraud committed by the oil companies and they point to damages. Now, the defense by oil companies is two-part. One is this is such a huge problem, it can only be dealt with by Congress and on a national or international level, at a level of governance which actually does not exist right now. Secondly, that we're doing something critical and essential that you rely on every day. So, in order to get around those defenses, that's why the element of intent is critical. It shows that they have, in order to proliferate the use, and there's all sorts of discretionary calls that made by everybody at an individual level and regions as well about how they're going to allocate funds for transportation. And those decisions are affected by the cost of oil, by the information available about burning oil. And so there have been some fairly adept and fairly specific efforts to work out precisely what damages have been caused by each of these companies, the size of each of these companies and the defendants, and demonstrations that there have been damage that would have been impossible without human-caused climate change, and human-caused climate change is supported, it's advanced, it's defended by these oil companies.
I'd like to note as well a recent important case here in the Pacific Northwest. The Macaw Indian Tribe and Shoalwater Bay Indian Tribe are suing oil companies for millions of dollars in cost to move their communities because of rising seas from the Olympic Peninsula region, areas where they've lived and depended on the land and the water for millennial for their way of life. And the tribes have been very important in advancing legal strategies around the violation of treaty rights, their access to areas that sustain traditional ways of living. Is that case significantly different in your understanding from cases that are being advanced through these states and cities around the country?
Well, it is different. For one, it has been moved to federal court and it will proceed there. But tribal cases are traditionally brought in federal court rather than in any particular state. And it's a very good case. And I think the sign of a successful litigious environment is that there are variations. Each of these cases is different. Some of them seek on a basis of fraud. Some of them are seeking damages, but they have different theories of liability. They have different evidence that they will be seeking from the oil companies, and they do support each other. When you hit a critical mass of these cases going forward, it's a steady increase in the costs imposed to defend by the oil companies, and these damages are not trivial. The
In
Multnomah.
terms of just paying off, which has been a strategy of corporations forever, is just paying the fine and moving on.
Yeah, well, the Multnomah County one seeks more than $51 billion in damages and in efforts to make reparations for the damage caused by the heat dome. And, $50 billion here, $50 billion there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money.
There's some that use racketeering as a strategy, and of course, we're most familiar with that strategy recently with Fannie Willis, and of course, the really problematic use of that with the Cop City activist there in Georgia and her using her racketeering charges. So even though people praise her around going after the Trump team on a racketeering strategy, that's also been a real problematic legal strategy. Can you say anything in closing about the racketeering strategy in some of these cases?
It can be a fruitful strategy. It's been, I think, just the language itself is helpful. It is a racket in the sense that Smedley Butler, the Marine from the 20s and the 30s, who routinely invaded Central American companies, said war is a racket. It's basically criminal. These people are routinely deceptive, and we are not. The criminal law is now designed to primarily be aimed at individuals, primarily people of color, but there are statutes available that will perhaps come into play once these civil suits start playing. And I think, again, that using the RICO Act, along with using the tribal rights, using the various forms of complaints for damages as defined in different states and different cities, all of these are good. All are necessary, really, if we seriously want to make litigation an important tool, one part of a larger effort to stop the climate damage being imposed by fossil fuel.
All of which depends on people on the streets as well as in those courtrooms and demands for an alternative vision of a sane and rational energy policy.
Well, that's true. You cannot expect to sit back and watch litigators change everything any more than you can when you're taking care of your health, just sit around hoping that somebody will come up with a nice pill. I mean, you've got to take charge. You've got to be active.
And also think broadly about what health means and what sustains a healthy society. Conservation was a very big part of the early environmental movement and doesn't have the same sex appeal as new technology schemes that are promoted every day to keep consumer culture and commodity capitalism going at its ferocious, aggressive pace. So, but you're saying these lawsuits are important and bring center stage the villainy of this industry and how it's promoted its own interests at the expense of the survival of people on the planet.
Yeah, and litigation has been a very peripheral, very marginal in that effort, but I think it's coming into its own over the next year or two. I expect 25, particularly 2026, there will be lots of litigation going on in the news all over the country.
And we will follow those cases. Thanks, Mike. We'll stay tuned.
Well, let me tell you about the climate dance. It's easy to do. You're nervous and you jump because this world's nearly through. So down some more tea, watch some foreign TV. Put your mind on anything but the truth. The leader's got a climate dance, it's easy to do. You grab hold of the treaty, then you tear it in two. Then go back to your people and spin me yarn about how the earth ain't gonna come no harm. We gotta cut our emissions by now.